So I think we're going to get started. There's a few announcements that I wanted to highlight. So it's homework one grades are out. If you have any questions, you can email Sehun, and you have his email on the website. I also put it on the slide. The deadline for homework two is extended to Wednesday before class. So you can, you know, if you guys need more help, you can see me after class or tomorrow during my office hours, or make an appointment, or go see Chris on Wednesday. I will have a practice midterm ready by this Wednesday, so 2 days from today. And you will have the midterm a week from Wednesday. And if you have any questions about clicker grades, please email Chris. I try to update them pretty often. They haven't been updated in two or three lectures, so if they haven't, you know, if you don't see that, that's okay. Chris will come back and update them. And if you haven't, if you have zeros or if you have any questions, email Chris, email me. Also about the homework, if you need extensions or if you, you know, just ask for help and we'll be happy to help you. You know, if you need an extra day or something like that. Any questions about, I don't know, grades or, yeah.
You said the midterm is going to be open
note? Yeah.
Okay. So we can print out all the slides.
You can print out all the slides, you can print out all the homeworks, you can print out all the solutions, you can print out stuff from the internet. Just, you can use a computer, you can use a calculator, you can use a computer that is connected to the internet, and you can't use a cell phone to communicate with somebody else. You can use your cell phone to do math if you need.
And there's solutions to the homework.
You can print anything you want.
No, I mean, there is solutions.
The TAs were supposed to upload solutions when he graded your homework. He was supposed to upload. So if you didn't get that, definitely let me know. So anybody who needs solutions.
I don't even see the grade. Are the grades supposed to be up on Sakai?
Yeah. You need to go, do not go through the grade book, go just the assignment.
It's out of 90, right?
It's out of 90, yeah. So the homework one grade is out of 90. Every problem was 10 points. Any other questions? No? All right, I think we're going to start with a few clicker questions today. It's not a big deal. I mean, you mess up like all of them, you get 8 points anyway. All right. So this is a clicker question about a repeat until loop. And the script says when flag is clicked, set x to 4 and repeat until x equals 1, and you repeat the following two statements. You play the sound pop and you change x by minus 1. I'm sorry, by 1. Think that this is 1, okay? No, it's minus 1. Sorry. All right, so this is the script that you have. Just work with this. And your options are A, it counts to 4. B, it pops 4 times. C, pops forever. D, when 4 equals 1, it stops. E, pops 3 times. I'm going to stop at 1. Does anybody need more time? Yeah? Okay. We'll stop at 1:30. Stop in 5 seconds.
Stopping. Okay, popular answer E. And another pretty popular answer is B. Okay.
So let's see, what does the script do? I'm going to write a little stick for every pop that it does. So this is how it goes. X starts by being 4. And it said repeat until X is 1. X is not 1. So we stay in the loop until we do until the condition is met. And it plays pop. And it decreases X to 3. X is still not 1, so it pops again. It makes X 2. X is still not 1, so it pops again. And it makes X 1. And now the condition is met, so it goes out of the loop, and it doesn't pop anymore. So the right answer was pops 3 times. Okay? Is this clear? Any questions? No? Try another one. This is a little trickier. So what does this script do? And the script is, when the flag is clicked, set X to 4, repeat until X equals 1, broadcast, popping and wait, and change X by minus 1. And what popping does is repeat X times, play sound pop until done. Okay? So popping pops X times, basically. Okay? And
X meaning the one that's in the red.
So this is when this line is executed, this happens, right? So this is a subroutine, and this is how I'm telling the computer to do the subroutine, and this is how the subroutine is defined. Okay, so, you know, I tell the computer whenever I want to do this popping, this is what you need to, what this is what the computer needs to do. Okay? So the options are A, it counts to 10, B, it pops 4 times, C, it pops forever, D, it pops 9 times, and E, it pops 10 times. Any questions, please let me know. Go ahead. So this is not a repeat until. This one, repeat until X equal 1.
Yeah, I don't.
Okay, so what are you confused about?
When you use broadcast.
Yeah. So when this line happens.
Right.
Then
popping, and then the popping is what's it's on the bottom, correct?
Yes.
The X, the repeat X, is not from the first script, correct?
Well,
variable.
X is a variable, and it's shared by the two pieces of code.
Okay.
So whatever X, so X is, you know, you can imagine it's a box, and it's shared by these two things. Okay, so, you know, the first time it's this popping is broadcasted, what is X going to be? Right, so it starts by being 4. And it's going to be 4 here. So the first time it runs, you know, it says repeat until X equals 1. It says broadcast pop, right? It goes here, it says repeat, it replaces X with 4, because X is 4,
mm-hmm.
And it does this.
Okay.
Any other questions?
So it just repeats, replaces X with 4, and does it do anything else?
And like, then repeat X, and then it replaces X with 4, and it repeats 4 times whatever's in the loop.
Oh, it repeats that 4 times?
Yes.
Okay.
Because that's how the repeat loop works. And then it goes back and continues to run.
Okay.
All right. So, yes, I'll start at 3:30, unless I get objections. Explain why it pops nine times? Yeah. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's 4 + 3 + 2, which equals 9. Yeah. Any questions about this? Like this on the midterm. Okay, so to recap again, as usual, we defined a machine language, which was supposed to be a very simple programming language, but also complex enough to encode all the basic operations that we've defined, which are ORs, ANDs, and NOTs. And this was our instruction set, and we said that these are the only things that we're allowed to do. So no matter how complicated our function is, we need to break it down into smaller, simpler operations. And these are the operations that we're allowed to do. And these are the codes for the operations. So, you know, if our computer gets an instruction, it generates a code. It generates a code for it, and this is how you generate the code. And this is breaking it down. So I'm going to run over this example again. These are the operations that you're allowed to do. And so if you have an expression like C equals not B and A and paren A or not B equals paren, then let's see what how the values change in the accumulator and in the variables. And so first we're going to do the parenthesis. And we can't do the whole parenthesis because we don't have something like accumulator equals, you know, variable or not variable. So we have to do we have to start with a not, so that's the simplest piece, the smallest piece of code that we can execute in that case. And so we say that accumulator equals not B because that's the operation that we're allowed to do. Then we move to A or not B, and so because we had in the accumulator there was not B, we can say, if you say accumulator equals accumulator or A, we're going to have in the accumulator, we're going to have not B or A, which is what we want, which is that parenthesis. And then the next operation is not B. We already have it in, well, we had it in the accumulator, right? So we lost it when we did this operation. We had not B in the accumulator, but then we had to rewrite something in the accumulator, so that was lost, so we have to compute that again.
So because something was lost?
Yeah, so let's see. What is my point here? So
where did you get the ACC or A? I understood where not B came from the other side.
Right. So we need to do this operation, right? We need to break it down into simpler operations.
Yeah.
Right? And so we cannot do this whole operation. So we're going to start with not B, and we put in the accumulator. And we can do stuff like accumulator equals accumulator or variable. Because in the accumulator there's not B, if we do accumulator or A, we're going to get not B or A. Because that's what's in the accumulator. Okay, so going back one slide, there's not B in the accumulator. And so now, how do we get A or not B?
Just ACC is not B or A.
Well, we can't do that because it's not on the list. But because not B is in the accumulator, if we do accumulator equals accumulator or A, It's going to be, the accumulator is not B, right? And so it's going to be an accumulator. We're going to have not B or A, which is what we want. Okay. So I think my point here was, so we do that, and now we're going to have not B or A in the accumulator. We need the not B, right, again. So what happens if we do accumulator equals not B? We're going to lose what we already have, right, because that gets written on top of what was already in the accumulator. So that we can't do that. And the way we still need your accumulator to do our nots and ands and ors. And so we're just going to save our value, this value, in a separate variable that we're not using. For example, D. We're going to say D equals accumulator. We're going to save our value, not B or A, in D. And then we can use the accumulator, and we're going to have this value in D saved. And we can use it later. Okay? And so we can say now that accumulator equals not B. We can do the and now, right? We can use this operation. Accumulator and A. Accumulator was not B, so it's going to become not B and A. So we have this whole chunk in the accumulator now. And now we can do the whole thing, right? So we have the accumulator is this. Contains this part here, and D contains this part here, right? So what do we do? What's the next step?
Equals not B and A and D.
That's another thing that we can't do, right? We can only do these.
Accumulator and D.
Accumulator equals accumulator and D. So this is D, this is, I think they're opposite. But we can do accumulator equals accumulator and D. And now we have our whole result in the accumulator. So not B and A or not B. Okay? So we took this complicated expression and we broke it down into instructions according to our language. And our language was designed so that we can do that with any Boolean expression, no matter how complicated it is. It can be broken down according to these instructions. Okay, so I think... Oh, yeah, and then we have to say C equals accumulator because we want the value to be in C. So this is another clicker question. You'll have to break down D equals A and B or C. And what is the what are the instructions that in this language that we define that... how can you write this, right? If you all want to write down, I'm going to go back. I can't. So you should all write down these instructions because these are the only ones that you can use. And then we'll go to the clicker question. Okay, anybody need more time? Yeah, you do. Okay. Question, and then if anybody needs more time for writing. So our expression is D equals A and B or C. And what are the machine language instructions for that? So for if anybody needs, I'm going to give it 20 more seconds for writing these down. The options are A, accumulator equals A and B, accumulator equals accumulator or C, and D equals accumulator. The second option is accumulator, so B. Accumulator equals B, accumulator equals accumulator and A, accumulator equals accumulator or C, D equals accumulator. The third, C, accumulator equals B, A equals A and accumulator, accumulator equals accumulator or C, D equals accumulator. Option D, accumulator equals B, accumulator equals accumulator or C, A equals A and accumulator, D equals accumulator. And E, accumulator equals A and B, accumulator equals A and B or C, D equals accumulator. Okay, I'm going to stop at 4:20.
Stopping? Wow. Okay. All right, B is the right answer. Let's see. Another A. Let's see. What is wrong with A? Yes, you cannot do accumulator equals A and B. That's illegal. It's not on the list. What else? What's wrong with C? Why is C not good?
Put the second operation in variable A and never exceed it.
Exactly. So, you know, we do all the calculations that we need to do, you know. So accumulator equals B, A equals A and accumulator, so A becomes A and B, but then we don't use A. We say accumulator equals accumulator or C. And so accumulator here is B, because we never changed it. And so accumulator equals B or C, and then this is going to be D equals B or C. Okay? And I think the other ones all have operations that you can't do. So the problem with this one is that you can't do B equals A. The problem with this one is that you can't do this, you can't do this. Okay? There are illegal operations in our language. All right. Yeah?
What happens if you started as like accumulator equals A? Can you also do that?
Sure, absolutely. Yep. Yeah. The reason I wrote them this way is so that they all look the same. Yeah.
Why can't you do D equals A?
Because you don't have in your list of... In your list of operations that you can do, there's no variable 1 equals variable 2. And by the way, if you see something like this, variable involved twice, so variable is here and variable is here, it's the same variable. It's either A equals accumulator and A. You can't do A equals accumulator and B. There's no code for that. You need the same variable here and here. Okay? So in order for that to be possible, you would have to have something like V1 equals V2 or something like that. Any other questions? Yeah.
Also, I mean, it's not that you're not allowed to, but don't you generally try to avoid putting stuff into the variables you're using in your equation? I mean, like, if you're writing a program that uses D equals A and B or C, uh-huh. Wouldn't you generally try to avoid stuffing stuff into the slots for A and B or C? In your calculations, wouldn't you normally use, like, E, F, and G, H for your variables?
Oh, I see. There's advantages and disadvantages.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you would specifically want to, but if you were just doing calculations, wouldn't you normally avoid that?
Not necessarily. I don't know. I haven't thought about that too much. From my experience programming, just, you know, avoid using many resources. So try using as little resources as possible. And make it fast and, you know, not a lot of memory. But this is not a big deal if you use some extra variables. Any other questions? Okay. Next question. Okay, so we haven't really done this, but it shouldn't be too hard. So you start by knowing that A is true, B is false, accumulator is true, and C is false. These are the values that are of the variables and accumulator before this happens. So before this code happens, these are the values that you have in those variables. What are the values for C and the accumulator after this code is run? And your options are A, accumulator is false, C is false, B, accumulator is false, C is true, C, accumulator is true, C is false, D, accumulator is true, C is true, and E, accumulator is true, but C cannot be determined. Any questions? Not yet.
Values to start with.
Accumulator is true in the beginning. Stop at 2:45. Maybe. Okay. Stopping. Accumulator. Now, the variables in the computer are not empty. You usually have some kind of value in there, but you might not care about it.
I mean, I just saw like C and the accumulator get defined as it goes through the code based on what A.
If they're changed, but they might not be changed.
So they have to start with something, so it's basically just nothing.
Yeah, right. It gets written on top of it. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, gonna move to the next level. Okay, So this time it's the same code, but you don't have trues and falses. You have to think about, okay, what is C going to be after these instructions are executed, regardless, you know, no matter what the values of A and B and the accumulator are. Okay, so it's the same code, accumulator equals not A, accumulator equals accumulator or B, accumulator equals accumulator and A, and C equals accumulator. And your options are A, C equals A or B, B, C equals A, C equals not A, or paren B and C, B and A, close paren, D, C equals not A, and E, C equals A and paren B or not A, close paren. Up at 1:40, maybe. Okay, stop. Okay. Yeah, if you need more time, that's fine. All right, so it's between E and C, basically. Which I thought that would be the case. Right. I'm gonna write it on in a text file so you can all see. Tell me what the code was. Not A, right? Please.
Accumulator or B.
Yeah.
Accumulator equals accumulator and I.
Okay. Not A, and we can actually put parentheses around it. because it's a value that's, as you saw in the example before, the value gets actually computed. So you can, it's okay to put a parenthesis around it, even though you might not need it. Okay, so after that we say accumulator equals accumulator or B. So it becomes not A or B. You can put parentheses around it. And after that, accumulator equals accumulator and A. Get an and A here. And C becomes equal to the accumulator. So it's going to be, we can write it, say A and not A or B. Okay? Does this make sense? If, okay, so I think this was option E. A and B or not A. There were, the order was a little different, but it doesn't matter because, you know, A or B is the same thing as B or A. Right, if nobody has questions, I actually wanted to update you on our Google search word. So, you know, you all remember probably that we made up a word that Google didn't know about, two words actually, and one was dude face. Double L, and now Google finally found it, right? So this is our website, and I told you I put the word on the website. It's at the bottom of the page, and Google didn't find it for a while, but then it figured it out. So this is our web page, and we have our word here at the bottom of the page. Okay? So this is good. Google's smart.
Did something change, or it just took a while?
It just took a while. Okay, so I didn't do anything. You know, some people offer to help by, you know, there's all kinds of things that you can do to make the Google find it faster. For example, you know, make it your status on Facebook or stuff like that. No, I just wanted not, you know, nobody do anything. Just put it on a web page. It's true that university web pages have a higher ranking, so Google finds it faster. But still, it took a few weeks. It took a while. Okay, let's see. What about the other? The other word was this one. It still doesn't know about. And so the difference between the two documents, I think I said this like 10 times. But the first word that Google actually found is on a web page that is pointed to by other websites. So our, for example, our website is pointed to by my personal web page, and you know, I guess Rutgers web pages and stuff like that. This one is on a web page that is not pointed to by anything, but it points to our website. I think there's a link to it. So there's no website on the internet that points to this is just there's a link to our website, but there's no web page on the internet that points to this page, and Google still doesn't know about it. Okay. So I was getting worried because there's so many web pages on the internet that, you know, I was thinking maybe it'll take Google too long to find our web page, but it didn't. It was good. All right, so again, this is also part of the recap. We talked about memory, and we talked about how memory is organized in, we can think about memory organized in variables, and each variable has a certain location. The computer information works, so access to memory works like, if I would tell you something like, okay, I need the following students to see me after class. And if I say that, you're going to listen for your name. And you're going to, you know, I'm going to say a few names. And you're going to be like, you know, am I this person? No, I'm not this person. Am I this person? I'm not. You know, so you're going to listen for your name. And the same thing happens in the computer. You know, the processor says something like, put two in the location, in this location. And all the memories alert to see, am I this that location? No, I'm not. Am I that location? Yes, I am. I need to take that number and store it. In my location. So we also talked about variables, and we decided that we needed if we need to a lot of numbers, that we need some kind of list. And we said that the list is just another variable that has, it's like a collection of a whole bunch of variables. It's a little more flexible, and we can deal with all the variables the same, like in the same way. Instead of naming all of them, you just have to say item 1 of L, item 5 of L. And we said stuff like item 7 of L is item 1 of L plus 4. And so we put here, we're going to put 9 because 5 plus 4 is 9. And so another clicker question about lists. So you can define lists in Scratch. And let's see. I guess I need to define some of these things. What this says is you insert the number 63 on the first location of the list. So item one of the list of num. This is the name of the list. Item one will be 63. Okay? And then what happens next is that it says insert 63 at 1 again. But this does not, the way Scratch works, you would think that it overwrites. So it had 63 here. It says, let's make this 65, but it doesn't do that. It actually pushes everything back and inserts the new number on the first position. Okay? So it's like, somebody, a line of people staying in line, and if somebody new comes in, they become the last person in line. It's kind of a bad example. Let's see.
It's like if they shove their way into the front of the line, push everybody back a space.
Right. Or you can think of plates. When you arrange plates in your, wherever you keep your plates, you put the new plate on top of the old plate. And so the former old first plate becomes the second plate, and so on. Okay, so this is how this happens. So 63 was the first element, then 65 is the first element, then 67 is the first element. And then say length of num for 2 seconds. Okay, so length of num is how many objects did I insert in the list. And this is just to get you, this can look very easy, but it's just to get you familiarized with just Scratch and lists and things like that. So are there any questions about? Yeah.
When you said length of number, how many there are there, or what is actually in there?
How many there are. So imagine that the list is, this is what I said. Num is a list of numbers that is empty, so it has no elements before the script is run. So you have no plates on the stack. What will this write say? Okay? A, it says 63, 65, 67. B, it says length of num. C, it says 3. D, it says 63, 65, 67, and then 3. And E, it says 0. Okay, I'm going to say 2 minutes. The list. So the sprite will say 3, because that's how many plates we put on. You know, we put plate 63, we put plate 65, and we put plate 67. Okay. So last question. This is okay. So the same thing happens. We insert 53 at the first element. So in the beginning, we insert 65 in the beginning. We insert 67 in the beginning. Then we set x to 1, and we repeat until x equals the length of num plus 1. So x, we repeat this until x becomes how many elements are in the list plus 1. And we say item x, so the x item, so it's going to start by being the first item, then it's going to be the second item, and so on. Say item x of num for 2 seconds, and change x by 1. And what is the sprite going to say? And the options are A, 63, 65, 67, B, it's going to say item x of num 3 times. C, it's going to say 63. D, it's going to say 67, 65, 63. And E, it's going to say 67. I'm going to stop at 140. Okay, 5 more seconds. I'm stopping. Yeah. So this is kind of, it's hard to say, but D is the right answer. Because of the way things are put in the list. So I know that
the right answer?
The right answer is D. So I know a lot of people have a hard time seeing here, but I'm going to try to talk. So the list starts by being an empty list, so there's nothing there. And then 63 gets inserted in the list. So let's just make the list like this. So this is our list. And 63 gets in the list, okay? And then we say insert 65 at the beginning of the list, the element 1. Remember how we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, item 1, item 2, item 3, item 4, item 5. And so 63 is at item 1. And then we say insert 65. And so what happens is 65 becomes 1, and 63 gets pushed back. We're going to have 63 is going to be the second plate on the stack. And so after we, the third instruction is insert 65 at 1. So then everybody gets pushed to the right. We're going to have 67, 65, and 63. And that's all. And then what happens is that x becomes 1. Repeat until x equals, what is length of num plus 1? 4. So x is not 4. We say item x of num. What is item x of num? It's 67, right? Because x is 1. And so we say 67, and we increase, we change x by 1, and so x becomes 2. We say 65, item x of num is 2, the second item. Item 2 of num is 65, so that's what we say. And then we make x3. And we say item 3. So notice how the reason why this is not IP until x equals length of num is because if I said that, it would have stopped at 3. So if x became one, x became 3 now, and this condition would be met. And so it wouldn't say my third item. So I need to put a plus 1 here. So x is 3. I say item 3 of num, which is 63. And then I make x4. And now x is equal to the length of the list plus 1. And so I'm stopping, and that's all I'm saying. So that's why the right answer is D. Okay? Any questions? I guess not. So this looks very loaded, but it's supposed to be Michael Littman, who came and gave the demo a few classes ago, or last class. He actually created this little programming language, the machine language, and he has a little program that shows in a very visual way what are the instructions. So these are the instructions that are being executed. You can actually type it in. And this is the binary code. So, you know, we've gone through, you know, the red slide with the 7-bit instruction set, and we know that if we have the instruction accumulator not D, we know the code of that instruction, we know the code for D, and we can build the 7-bit code. And that is, if you take the 7-bit number and you translate it to decimal, this is a decimal code for the instructions. So, you know, we can say instruction, you know, 15, and then convert that to binary, and this is what it is, accumulator plus accumulator, or P. So this is actually what the processors go through, this kind of thing. So this is what they actually run on a very low level. And so you can see how you go from these very simple instructions to bits. And so this is actually, the architecture of a computer is, the computer is a big state machine. And you have whatever's in the memory, whatever's in the accumulator, whatever's in the registers, and all the information the computer has goes in the processor, and it gets processed. And then new values for memory, accumulator, and all the other variables are generated. And so This all goes back in millions of times a second, and that's how the information is processed. And this is just a very loaded slide that just shows it's nothing that we haven't seen. We have if-then-else gates that we have seen. We have ORs, we have NOTs and ANDs, and we can actually imagine not maybe making it, but you know, maybe understanding how it works on a very high level. And everything gets, you know, processed in this processor, and then it goes back and it gets processed again, and so on. And so every processor that is manufactured has a certain set of these instructions. And ML cubed is the language that we've been looking at. We've been breaking complicated instructions into smaller instructions in this language. And it's made to fit on the slide, but usually manufacturers look at other things. They look at speed, they look at cost, they look at ease of running programs on it. So depending on these things, every computer manufacturer designs this programming language. And you know, here are some examples. So this is the instruction set. You should be lucky. You should be lucky that you only have, like, you know, 7 bits. There's all kinds of crazy things. There's all kinds of loops. There's all kinds of, you know, loading into memory, loading out of memory, adding, subtracting. Anyway, this is just to, you know, impress you and make you feel like you have easy. And this is actually a really cool computer that they made just kind of like to use in a class like CS105. You know, it's a computer that I think writes on cards. It has very simple instructions like you know, take the number from the input card and put in a specified memory cell. This is kind of the architecture. And I thought you might find it interested for your cell phone. Okay, so your cell phone has a little processor in it, and this is, not that you would understand or that I would understand it, but this is the instruction set for the processor on your cell phone. And these are all the instructions that your cell phone has, your processor has, and you know, if Verizon or somebody, you know, buys a specific cell phone, they can program it. They, you know, they actually have experts who can, you know, program in this language, and they take this instruction set. There's a whole manual on it. It has like 32 pages where every single thing is explained. So what are all these bits? Why are they set up this way? And so you can take a look at it. One thing I wanted to see, there's multiplication. So apparently, cell phones need to do a lot of multiplications. There's kind of, you know, they have little variables too. They store things in them. I thought this was cool. Coprocessor is, so cell phones have a processor, and sometimes they need to make, they need another processor. And this coprocessor is a smaller, maybe not smaller, but it's another processor that deals with secondary things like, you know, all kinds of media. If you wanted to record, you know, if you have an iPhone and you want to record something, or if you wanted to, you know, play a video, there's a lot of computing and there's a lot of processing in the video, and that is dealt by this other processor. So the main processor deals with important stuff like, you know, getting the voice, you know, voice comes as bits, they're decoded and so on, you know, doing that very fast, and the coprocessors deals with stuff that's secondary. Okay, so I thought this was. Okay, so here we are. We've seen this before. We've learned about logic and Boolean algebra. We learned about Scratch and Java. And we had machine language somewhere in here. And we have this instruction set. And machine language is kind of between, you know, bits and codes. And, you know, we've seen how we can go from machine language to bits and how we can go from bits to machine language. But there's something else in here on a lower language, on a lower level, that I would like to talk about. And that is expression trees. And they are kind of the link between programs and circuits. And they also give us a different view of logical expression. So this is a statement, is that every Boolean function has an expression tree associated with it. So, you know, you have this complicated, you know, whatever the Boolean expression is, you can turn it into a tree, and we're gonna see what this tree is like. It's actually an upside down tree. We can go from expression trees to this too. And this is what the compilers do. So if you were to program, your compiler would take your code and would translate it, would use expression trees to figure things out. And so here are some examples. If your expression is true, the expression tree looks like this. It's just a little square with a true in it. If your expression is false, it's false. What about true and false? This is, you take the two values here, true and false. You have the two leaves. You have the leaf for true, you have the leaf for, this is called the leaf, because it's at the bottom of the tree, and the tree is upside down. So you have the true, you have the false, and you and them together, and this is how you draw the tree for true and false. If you have a not true, your expression is not true. You have a true, and then there's a not above it. And so you can say things like true and true, and that will be two trues and a together. You can have not true or false, and usually when you see this, you know that you need to do the not before the or, and so you're gonna have a not true here, and then it's ored with false. And the expression trees also show, it's very clear in the expression tree what the order of operation is. Order of operations, right? So. So if the tree were not paren, true or false, close paren, that would be a not on top, and the not would have a line down, and it would be an or between a true and a false. We're gonna see that in a few more examples. Okay, so this is just taking these two trees and ending them together. So the expression is true and true, putting parens around it, and not true or false, putting parens around it. And so, see, this was the first one. This is the second one. We ended them. And the way we draw the tree is just taking the tree for the first one, the tree for the second one, and making an and putting the and on top. Okay? Very important, stuff that I've seen in the past. You know, this also shows that and has two inputs, and or has two inputs, and not has one input. So sometimes people do stuff like not and with two things. I think it's pretty intuitive that, you know, when you are going to draw expression trees, just try to keep that in mind. Okay, is this clear? Any questions? I like expression trees because they're very visual and they're not very hard to understand. So now we have to define what we're talking about. So we need to define what expression trees are. And this is the definition that we come up with. An expression tree is either true or leaf. So it's either true or false, or it's a not of an expression tree, or an and of two expression trees, or an or of two expression trees. So that's our definition of, this is how we define expression trees. Okay? What do you call this kind of definition? I mean, do you find definitions like this in the dictionary? Oh, not that you read the whole dictionary. So we're using expression tree in, we're defining expression tree, and we're using expression tree in the definition. So it's called circular definition, okay? And usually it's not okay to do that, but for us it is okay because we have somewhere the expression tree ends, and we can say, at the bottom, there's only trues and falses, and it's well-defined. So that's the definition. And so this is the blog about the circular definition. It's very, you know, the circularity is safe. So, you know, you're allowed to have circular definitions if you talk about, you know, okay, when does it stop? You know, I can't just say expression tree is an expression tree. I have to give some kind of stopping condition, and the stopping condition is at some point we're going to reach a true or a false at the bottom of the tree. And so there's no other way to define expression trees because otherwise the only other way would be to just enumerate them all, and there's an infinity of them, so this is the only way we can define them. And so here's another a few definitions. The root of the tree is whatever is on top of the tree. So there's the top node, which will be either and or not, or true or false if the tree is really small. The subtree is, you usually have, if you have a knot, the knot only has a subtree. So it's the tree below, underneath the root. And you have a left subtree and you have a right subtree, which are pretty obvious. And the leaf is whatever's at the bottom. So, you know, you have true or false, or usually it's true or false, or a variable. And the depth is the number of nodes between the root and the furthest leaf. So if you have a tree that is very shallow on one side and very deep on the other side, you have to go on the side where it's deep and go all the way down. And so how do I figure out what the value each tree? We said that every Boolean function has an expression tree associated with it, and we know that every Boolean function has a value. If we know all the values of the variables in the expression, we can actually figure out what the expression is. And so every tree is the same way, right? So how do we figure out what the values of this tree is? And we go from the bottom and we say, it's kind of blocked. So we're going to start here. This is an and of two trues. So that whole thing is going to be true, right? What is the next thing we do? The not true. Okay. And the not true is going to be false. And we replace the whole subtree with its value. What is the next thing that we do? I guess right. So or between false and false or false, which is going to be false. And then we have an and between a true and a false. And that will be false. Okay. Okay. And so this is one way. Yeah, that was kind of weird. This is one way we can do it. We can also go from the root. And this is a little trickier. It's basically doing the same thing, but this is how it goes. We have this tree, and we don't want to say it's really deep, and we don't really want to think about it. And so we are going to see, okay, the root is an ant. It's an ant between two things. So I will say this is written on a piece of paper. I will rip this part, I will rip this part, and I'll give it to two other people, and the two people will compute that for me. And I'll know that it's an ant between whatever they answer me. And so this person says it's an and between two things. I don't want to think about what they are. Here's this piece of paper or two, gives them to two other people. And the people say, oh, this is actually a true, and this is actually a true. And they return two truths to him. And he says, oh, I'm doing an and between the two things that the people told me. And so basically it's doing the same thing, because you have to go all the way down to the bottom and then build up. But it's conceptually a little different, and I'm going to show you why this is important. Because this is how, when we program it, this is how we program it. Program it top to bottom. And so, you know, the same way. So the friend answers me true, the left friend, and the right friend answers me false, and then I only have to do the and. And that's going to give me false. And so this makes the point that it's just cleaner to program. And I'm going to show you, this is just code, which we haven't really looked into, but I'm going to show you that you guys can understand what this code does. So I'm evaluating a tree, and if the root of the tree is true, so if I only have a node, I'm returning true. So the value of a tree that is made out of just a node that is true is going to be true. If my root is false, I'm going to return false. And if my root of the tree is not, so I can have a not there, I'm just going to evaluate, I'm going to assign a variable, which will be evaluating the tree that's underneath, and then I'm just going to return not that value. So if I have a tree that has a not on top and a whole subtree, I'm evaluating the subtree, and then I'm just notting whatever the value of the subtree is. If the tree is and, I need two variables. It's going to be the left tree. So I'm evaluating the left subtree, I'm evaluating the right subtree, and then I'm returning V1 and V2. And if the root is an OR, I'm just doing the same thing, but I'm ORing the values together. And this is just to show you that this is a top-to-bottom approach, and it really makes the code much cleaner. It'd be really hard. You really need experience in programming, but it makes it really hard if you don't do it like this. It makes it, the code is way more complicated and very, okay. So what if we have variables? What if we have, instead of true and false, we have A and B? We can just say, well, the result of this tree is not A or B, right? So, you know, not A or B, and that's our result. Or we can say, well, do we know A and B? And if we know A and B, we can just say, what is this going to be? So if A is false and B is true, this is going to be true, or true, it's going to be true. And we can just answer that. And true and false. And another thing that's really cool, and this is actually what compilers do, is that they actually take an expression tree and they turn it into assembly code. They turn it into a really simple machine language code. So, for example, we know here, so I think this is way easier to see. Because before we were going from very complicated Boolean expressions, and we're trying to figure out, oh, what am I going to do first? This is very simple to see that I'm going to do the not first. And so I'm going to say accumulator equals not A. That's the first thing I'm going to do. And then I'm going to do the OR, accumulator equals accumulator OR B. So in a way, it's simpler to go from expression trees to code, because it's more, you know, the tree kind of breaks it down for you. And so, you know, you probably heard of compilers. There's compilers and interpreters, and I'm going to show you what the differences are. The interpreter takes code like this, which is the code for evaluating the tree, and it returns you know, you're giving the interpreter an actual tree, and it gives you an actual, it gives you an actual value. So the interpreter takes code and values, replaces the values in it, and just, you know, the not false becomes a true, and then it does true or false, and it's gonna say true. And so the interpreter doesn't really work with code at a very high level. And so this is the definition. Interpreter takes a program and turns it into a value. So the interpreter is like a black box who takes code and returns, makes it happen. So it evaluates your tree for you if that's your code. The compiler, on the other hand, takes code and turns it into the simple assembly language that your processor can understand. And so basically, it's a program. It's kind of funny. It's a program that takes a program as input and outputs another program. All these programs are different, but I think that's very interesting. And it takes much more work to make a compiler than to make an interpreter, because you have to work on this very high level. And so, next time, I guess we're gonna do. We're going to take a whole bunch of expressions, and we're going to see how we can build the expression trees for them, if they're sorted in two later, or if they're sorted in another variable.